Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, which is all podcasted and brought to you by Moda Fabrics and American Patchwork and Quilting Magazine. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and today we're going to take a trip around the quilt land. We're going to talk about specialty rulers, we're going to talk about barn quilts, quilting with corduroy, and making banners. So first up, I have got the wonderful Stephanie Dunfrey of Loft Creations. Stephanie has a new book out about working with corduroy in your quilts. And so, you know, I've been following Stephanie's blog for a long time. She's always got really clever things that she shares. And when I saw this about the corduroy, I'm like, okay, I have to figure this out. I got to get her on here. So welcome to the show, Stephanie.
Thanks, Pat. How are you?
I am great. So let's start back a little bit. How did you like get into sewing? Have you always sewed?
Actually, no. I'm kind of a late bloomer. I probably had two failed attempts at home economics, and my mother, terribly creative, was probably, you know, fearful that the creative gene skipped a generation. My sister and I kind of preferred sports, but I always, her being so crafty, I was always very interested and appreciated handmade. Mm-hmm. So when my husband was stationed in Japan, my kids were young, and I had started to develop an interest in quilting because my mom had, you know, the resurgence of it in the 70s and what have you, she got into it. And there was a sewing class offered, and I thought, well, if I have to learn to sew to learn to quilt, I better do that. So I started with that step, and they offered a beginning quilting class at the rec center, and I took that, and that sort of was my jumping off point, and I've never looked back.
I think that's funny that you had to learn to sew in order to quilt. Because
that was the progression that I figured you had to do.
Well, you know, I do find Stephanie occasionally out on, you know, there are people who haven't sewed, you know, as younger people and taking sewing at school or anything. So when they want to quilt, they don't know anything. They have to really start at the beginning.
Exactly. I mean, I didn't know how to operate a machine, you know, thread the needle and
right.
So I needed those basics first.
So when did you decide that it would be fun to have a blog and share your experiences? And what did you start out with a quilt blog, or did you end? Were you doing other things first?
No, it was a quilt blog. My kids had graduated from high school, so I found myself, you know, home alone, so to speak, and I would just make things, you know, flannel pillowcases and just all kind of things just because I enjoyed sewing. And so, you know, I had like this stack of 50 pillowcases and I'm like, what do I do with them now? I could donate them. And my daughter was home from college and she goes, oh, have you heard about Etsy? And I'm like, no. So that was my first introduction to Etsy.
Ah.
And then she helped me set up a shop. And so I started selling some handmade things, which was great. And then she said something about a blog one day, and I'm like, I don't even know what that is. So she explained it to me, and I'm like, ooh, I wonder if there's quilt blogs. And lo and behold, there were. So she got me started on that too. And that's been probably about 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm. I know you're a pretty regular writer, you know, so it's always fun for me. So I can go and check in every so often and see what's going on. Let's talk about your book, because really, this is, to me, it's very exciting to see a different fabric used for quilts, because I think there's all kinds of potential for quilt making to be just a little bit different. And your book's called Uncommonly Corduroy with Martingale, right?
Absolutely, yes.
So what's it about? Just sort of tell me the basis of the book.
Well, when Martingale actually approached me about doing a book, which was surprising, I was glad I was sitting down, and I thought, you know, I thought about it, and I thought, well, if I don't have anything different to say for me, then I just wanted to offer something different. So I said no at first, and then I just really, it kind of put that little, you know, inkling there to start really thinking about it. And I had made bags with corduroy and on some of my pattern covers, and my son at the time was living at home, and I showed him a bag, and he was, boy, thrilled to death. And I said, look, I use corduroy. And he goes, corduroy's for pants. And I'm like, no, it's not. And so with that comment and then the stash of corduroy that I do have, because I love to work with it, and mostly I just had been doing bags, that was sort of how I got started with the idea of doing a book using corduroy as my primary fabric.
Ah, so let's, you know, for me, I have not, you know, Stephanie, I've not really looked at corduroy lately. So, you know, okay. I haven't really gone in the store and said, you know, what's there. So I need like a little education on what actually is available, because my thought of it is like 70s wide whale or something, you know.
It's... I totally agree. Well, basically I got started because Joanne Fabrics happens to carry it in for garment sewing. And I love to go up and down the aisles, and I went, oh, my goodness, they had different prints and solids, and that's how my collection started growing. And it's not especially widely available in your, you know, bricks and mortars quilt stores. I did have to do some online shopping to get some of the other colors that I needed. But basically, I use 21 whale, and the only thing that's really different about corduroy is nap and whale. And nap is basically, it's like velvet. You pet it one way, it's soft. You pet it the other way, it's bumpy. Whale is the ridges per inch. So if it's 21 whale, it's really soft as a hanky. If it's like, you know, 14 whale, that's like some of your 1970s corduroy pants. So I predominantly use the really hanky, soft 21 whale corduroy, and the majority of it's in cottons, but there are some that have like a synthetic blend, a little more stretchy. But it's...
So you're finding a bunch of different stuff out there. Because I know in your book, you took your son's sort of, oh, it's just for pants, and really had fun with that in the book, because you show little pants of, you know, pants, you know, there's a pattern for pants, but you have a pair of pants in there, a little pair of children's overalls and corduroys. So for people like me, they were like, oh, yes, I remember those.
Yeah, it's basically, when I would look for it, I'd find it under garment sewing, and it's like, well, it's not just for garment sewing.
Right.
And as far as working with corduroy, there's really no special threads or needles that you need to use.
Okay.
In my book, I have, you know, some tips, you know, that I explain the nap and the whale, and I explain, you know, some of the corduroys wider, but when I wrote the pattern directions, I use the width of the traditional cotton fabric, because although I would absolutely love for people to just really want to try corduroy and love it as much as I do, I know it might not be available to some people, and some people might not even want to use it. So I wanted the pattern directions to be for people that just want to use your traditional cotton fabrics and not have to try and, you know, figure out, oh my gosh, do I buy this much or this much?
Based
on the width.
Yeah, that's a really good point, because you've got such adorable patterns in this book that people will want to make them, whether they're corduroy or not. I mean, they're just so cute. And you have so many bags in here. It's like, I want to sew a bag like now, looking through the book. Yeah. So, let's talk. I want to do one more thing about the corduroy itself. Do you pre-wash it? Do you find any shrinkage? Do you find a lot of linty with it? What's sort of its characters there?
Well, first of all, I pre-wash everything. That's just me. I like to do it. It softens, you know, any fabric up, and hopefully it gets any color run potential out and any shrinkage. And there is some shrinkage, but I don't think there's as, you know, any more shrinkage with pre-washing corduroy than there is with pre-washing cotton fabrics.
It's okay.
Different manufacturers, I think, fabrics, I'm sure, you know, all wash differently to some degree. And so I do pre-wash. Yes, corduroy makes dust, I like to call it. and it has a tendency to, you know, maybe, you know, you get a little dust cling. I keep a lint roller handy when I'm mm-hmm. using it, just in case, because I have a dog and, you know, I don't want mm-hmm. Abby hair and everything. But mm-hmm. It's, you know,
it's a little more than regular cotton. So you're going to expect a little bit of that. So tell me, what's your favorite project in the book? I know you're not allowed to have a favorite, but I bet you do. You could tell just me. I won't tell anybody.
Okay, sure. Since I love Dresden plates, and it is my most favorite quilt block ever, I would have to say the cover project. Mm-hmm. It has a companion, Mr. and Mrs. D, which D could be for Dresden, but my last name being Dunphy, it's a project for the Mr. and a project for the Mrs. So, but I would have to say that's probably my favorite one because I love a Dresden.
Oh, I like the story too. And you have a gorgeous star quilt in here. I think that's one of my favorites in the book because that's like on my list to do first. Tell me what we have about a minute. What all do you talk about on your blog? You know, just a little highlight.
Well, it started as a personal blog, and hopefully, you know, I would connect with other quilters, which I certainly have, but the crafting community as a whole, I think I've learned so much. Hopefully I've given something, but I've learned so much, and, you know, just different, I've tried different things that I might not have tried before, but I talk about my dog. I've learned to crochet, seeing all this gorgeous crochet, you know, everywhere. I talk about food because I like to cook, so there's a little bit of personal here and there, but nothing, you know, just some family, you know, fun things. And I enjoy it. And I just feel like having a blog has been like having an international quilt group. And I've made some of the, you know, greatest friends that I may never meet.
Well, Stephanie, this has been so wonderful. I want people to visit you at designsbyloftcreations.com.
Yes.
And do you have a tab on your sidebar to your store where they can get your book and that kind of thing?
I do.
Right?
I do. I have lots of tabs on the side for that and patterns
perfect.
And what have you. So.
Perfect, perfect, perfect. Well, thank you so much for being here, Stephanie. This has been really, really great. I hope I'll see you again real soon.
All right. Thank you so much, Pat. I've enjoyed it.
We'll be right back.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To store a matching spool and bobbin together, thread both onto a long pipe cleaner and twist the pipe cleaner ends together.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out. Go to allpeoplequilt.com.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I am so excited because we are going to talk about barn quilts. And if you're a quilter for more than 10 minutes, you've heard about barn quilts. And there is a documentary that's been filmed and is in the process of being, you know, put together. And I asked the producer of this, Julie Donofrio, to come on and just tell me a little bit about this documentary she's doing and what kind of the process happened for her to fall in love with barn quilts. So hi, Julie. Thank you for being here.
Hi, Pat. Thank you so much for having me. This is such a thrill.
You know, I am just really quilters. You know, we love our quilt blocks. We love them to death.
Yeah.
And you yourself. Yeah, I know you come from a quilting family, but you're not a quilter, right?
This is true.
Yet.
I have the utmost respect for the technique and the art form, but my mom is the quilter in the family. And so it's through her that I even recognized what I saw up on the barn. I knew that was a quilt square, but
right.
What it was doing there, I had no clue. But no, I myself, I've knitted a few scarves. I know how to use a sewing machine, but I just haven't quilted yet. Never say never.
Right. That's right. Never say never. Yes. So tell me a little bit about how you decided to do a documentary on barn quilts. What sort of was the catalyst that happened?
Sure. Well, I'm a journalist by trade, so I'm always observing. There's always a story to be told. Everyone has a story. There's just millions of stories out there. And in the summer of 2009, I was traveling cross-country on another project, and I happened to be down in Northeast Tennessee. And again, I was with my friend and spotted something on this barn. And I looked and said, oh, that's a quilt square. Mm-hmm. But why was it there? That was the big question. And so I turned to the internet, and it didn't take long for me to discover Donna Sue Groves. Donna Sue was the woman behind the quilt square. I call them quilt squares. People call them barn quilts, quilt barns. But I realized that she was the woman behind it, you know, more than a dozen years ago in rural Ohio. Mm-hmm. And she came up with the idea of putting these blocks of wood up on barns to create driving trails as a way to build tourism in very rural areas. Mm. And it was not just about tourism, but as a way to preserve barns, as a way to help local artists sell their wares, drive people in to these areas that sometimes you would just pass if you were to stay on the interstate. And what really hooked me about her story, not only was it this wonderful phenomenon of the barn quilts, but that I stumbled upon a page by the folks who had a trail out in Garrett County, Maryland, and they had put up a pink page because Donna Sue was in the middle of battling breast cancer, and she had lost her job. She was fighting so hard for her life, and these people she had met through the Quilt Trail Project wanted to help her. And it just struck me that this was more than just building a community in your immediate area, but it had transpired over states and
right.
was creating a much larger community. And to me, that was the beautiful story that I wanted to tell.
I know quilters are the most amazing group. It's like the quilterhood, I call it, the sisterhood,
yes.
the brotherhood, the quilterhood. It's just amazing how they come together. Were you able to actually meet Donna Sue?
Absolutely.
Yay.
Yes. And I've actually followed her for the last 4 years and gotten to know her very well. And she's been so kind to just open her heart and her life and to share this story, because while I am telling the story of the quilt barns and the quilt squares, it's her story as well.
Mm-hmm.
She came up with the idea because she wanted to honor her mother, who is a quilter and who is very much with us, by the way, Nina Maxine Groves.
Mm-hmm.
But Donna Sue herself, though not a quilter, she's like me. Her grandmother's quilted. Her mother is a master quilter. And so when they moved to Ohio, they had bought this piece of land that had an old tobacco barn on it.
Mm-hmm.
And Donna Sue just thought it was the ugliest thing she'd ever seen. So she told her mom, someday I'm going to paint you a quilt square.
Mm-hmm.
And this was kind of a running joke for years until friends of Donna Sue's in the community said, you know what, you better make good on that promise to your mother.
Yeah.
And Donna Sue is a community organizer. She's been involved in the arts. And she said, well, why just do one? Let's create a driving trail. Let's do this for the community. And I just thought that was just so wonderful, you know, to be able to honor her mother in that way, but then create something much larger.
I know. That's the whole thing about it. It's like it just, she had a vision. And
yeah.
It's just so, so incredible. Now, at what point, I'm just really curious about your story, because you're part of this whole, you're part of this to bring it to us, is what inside of you all of a sudden said, you know, I need to do this, because it's kind of a labor of love. This is your own personal project. You are a veteran filmmaker. You have a, you know, work for televisions and all kinds of things. So what kind of happened inside of you to make it go?
Sure. It was meeting her, having that opportunity to meet her back in 2009. I felt a real connection, and we had done a short video on her at that time. Mm-hmm. And I just realized this was a story that couldn't be told in 5 minutes or less. It had so much more to it. And she agreed. And I just felt so honored that she would trust me with her story. But I think it's knowing what kind of love and tradition go into quilting, mm-hmm. seeing my own mother, who only picked it up about 20 years ago, how she fell in love with it. And it is about preserving this moment in time as well. Having met Donna Sue and seeing this trail emerge, I realized that, you know, 20 years from now, we're going to look back and I bet there's going to be quilt squares everywhere and people aren't going to know where it started. And so this is kind of my chance to document it right now in Donna Sue's own words. Mm-hmm. And to me, that's really special because I want people to know how this started, that it was because this woman loved her mother, wanted to honor the land she came from and the traditions that she grew up with. And I just think that's Americana. That's America at its best.
I know. It's just, it just gives you chills. It's like, oh, you know, so cool. So what will the film, I mean, you're going to tell the story and how it started. Yeah. Will the film, I mean, you've done a lot of the filming already, right, Julie?
Yes. All the filming is done.
Okay.
So
that's a big thing. So did you go across the country and are you going to be showing a lot of the trails because they're being documented now?
Yes. Well, I did have the great opportunity, and gosh, when you said quilterhood, I mean, I have met the kindest, most generous people on this journey. I myself have traveled, of course, to Garrett County, Maryland, because I live in Washington, D.C., and I just had to meet these people because they're the ones who helped me find Donna Sue. But I've traveled to Iowa and Illinois and, believe it or not, California. They have a couple of trails.
Oh, good.
And so while I've been able to really document those specific ones, I'm using them as an example because there are over, you know, hundreds of trails across the United States and even up in Canada. And so, I couldn't visit everybody, but I certainly wanted to show a representation of all the trails. And but I would love, once the film is complete, to take it to festivals. I hope to find it on a home on television, whether it's PBS or a cable channel, just so many people out there who are not only fans of barn quilts, but quilting in general and Americana can see this. And I do hope to bring it to festivals and quilt gatherings and small quilt groups and such over the years and hopefully have it find a home in a museum or some place where it can live and people can look back and find it and see what was so special and how it started.
There's really some really great quilt museums, so I'm sure that you're looking at
those
places.
Yes, fingers crossed. Yeah.
Now, how long are you planning it to be? Is it going to be like a half an hour show, an hour show, 2 hours?
I'm aiming for about an hour.
Okay.
As it's unfolding, there's just so much rich information there, but I think about an hour, I think that'll be a nice package size where people can get a real feeling for Donna Sue and for the trails. But you know, I love everything. I've gotten to see so many wonderful squares. I meet so many wonderful people. I want to keep it all, but I just can't do that. So about an hour.
Now, people can put up a square without just on their own, right? It's not like you have to sign up somewhere to have a barn quilt. Square.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, Donna Sue's favorite quote, or at least mine of hers, is anybody can play. So while yes, it's lovely to be part of the quilt trails, and it's very special, especially as one is developing, to be part of a trail. There are thousands of squares where people just saw them, fell in love, and said, hey, I want to do that. Mm-hmm. And, of course, and, you know, people have developed businesses about around painting them. So you could actually order one and have someone make it for you. All you do is pick the design and the colors and make it your own. So it's something you can either do by yourself or with your 4-H group or your Girl Scouts or Boy Scouts. You can create your own. Church groups create them. You don't have to be part of a trail. You can have one of your own, Pat.
Right. That's right. I know. I saw somebody who put one just on their front porch, you know, like a welcome sign, right? You know, right by the front door. I thought, oh, I need to do that. Now, you do have a site. We have about 30 seconds here. You do have a site that people can sort of keep track of what's going on. Would you just tell us that?
Sure. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook. We're Piece Together Documentary. And you can also sign up for our emails at piecetogetherdocumentary.com.
Wonderful. Julie, thank you so much for being here. I am so excited. I'm going to have to keep up with you and find out when it's all ready and where we can see it.
Thank you, Pat. I really appreciate the support. This has been fun.
Awesome. This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, which is podcasted, and we will be taking a little break. And when we come back, we have Kimberly Imo. I'm Pat Sloan.
Boost your sewing skills from start to finish with daily tips from the editors of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching. Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I'm so excited. Kimberly Imo is back with me again today. She's an amazing teacher. She's a designer. She's an author. And what I wanted to have her come back on and talk to me about is rulers, and specifically specialty rulers. Kimberly loves specialty rulers. A lot of you have them. A lot of you have them and don't know what to do with them. And I thought it would be really great to sort of explore the concept of a specialty ruler and why they can be so incredible for your workflow. So, Kimberly, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me back, Pat. I'm just really excited to be talking to you again.
You know, specialty rulers, you really are an advocate. I mean, not only do you use them, but you've designed some yourself. And so first, tell me a little bit about, or just sort of describe, what is the difference between what I would call like a standard ruler that we all work with and a specialty ruler?
Sure. A standard ruler are the rulers that we all use and love for just regular quilt making. They can be the 6x24, which seems to be one that everyone needs to have. Mm-hmm. It has just regular inch marks, or in some cases metric markings, but we'll use inch marks for today. Mm-hmm. And they have the inch marks and quarter and eighth inch markings on them. And most of them, or some of these standard rulers, have the 45-degree line, the 60-degree line, and they tend to be either rectangles or squares. And if you were going to be lost on a desert island and you could only take one quilting ruler, that would be the one you would take, that 6x24-inch ruler, because basically you can do everything you need to do with that one ruler. It just makes it a little harder if you want to cut some funky shapes.
Right, right. So all of us are kind of, I think we can all sort of get that part. Like, you know,
right.
And I would have to have a square ruler to go on the desert island. Yes, because
that's
I love
right.
my half square triangles and squaring up triangles with a rectangle is not good. So specialty rulers, there must
right.
be, I don't know, 3 million of them on the market now.
A zillion at least. Right.
They started out very slowly and then have just exploded as people have kind of got their creative juices going and several
right.
companies will manufacture them. And so when did you first, and especially rulers will do a specific, often one specific task or one sort of small
right.
group
and
of
that,
tasks.
You just hit the nail on the head. Specialty mm-hmm. rulers are designed by someone to do a specific task, to create a specific unit in quilt making or do something specialized. When I designed my specialty rulers, it was a case of see a need, fill a need. I just thought that the first one I designed was the easy flying geese ruler. And I just thought, well, there wasn't really a method out there that I really liked for making flying geese. And yet I love making flying geese.
Mm-hmm.
And most of us know how to make flying geese traditionally with just rectangles and squares.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times, you know, they come out a little wonky or you have to cut off the side triangles. And, you know, mm-hmm. people always say, I'm going to make something with those side triangles. But in my case, I never did. So I didn't want to waste fabric anymore. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to be able to make the flying geese units from half or whole sizes. I didn't want to mess with strange cutting strange amounts like 2 7/8 or anything weird. I wanted to be able to cut my units from strips, not waste any fabric, and I didn't want to do the math. So that's how it kind of came about.
You know, that's interesting because you actually were there thinking, I need a tool
yes.
to make my life easier.
Yes.
And so
it just kind of evolved from there, and I thought, well, what are the methods that are out there now? And I did some research. I looked at mm-hmm. the few methods at the time that were out there, and this is about 10 years ago, and kind of made notes about what I liked or what I didn't like about the rulers that were out there to make flying geese. And I made those notes and did the research and then thought, now what are the things I want? And I thought, well, the first thing I want is I want all the math built in. And I don't want to have to think about the math. I want to have one number in my head. And mm-hmm. so I started working backwards from that perspective. And that's what, when I teach, I want to make it really easy for other people. I want to make them say, oh, I can do that. That's mm-hmm. really easy. So one of the things that's really important to me about specialty rulers is making sure that the ruler itself, or at least the ones I design or use, are self-explanatory. I don't want to have to go search for the instruction sheet that came with it 6 months from now.
Oh, yeah.
I want to be able to pick it up and know how to use it, or everything needs to be on the ruler itself. So it's pretty self-explanatory. And I think that's kind of what separates a good specialty ruler from one that's maybe not so good.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever had that experience where you've seen a demo at a show and got mm-hmm. all excited about it and then got home and 6 months later you couldn't remember how to use it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah,
so,
yeah. We all have those rulers. And then you go to another class and you're like, I think I have that ruler, you know? That's, what was that for?
So, right. Or you pull a ruler out that you haven't seen in a while, and you're like,
yeah.
Why did I buy this?
I can't remember.
I've done that.
I think that it's so critical what you just said about having the ruler either having directions right on it, or it's so self-explanatory, you
right.
know, that somebody can pick it up. Now, I love that yours are made by Easy.
Right.
And it's called Easy Flying Geese Ruler, the one that we were just discussing. And you say, no math, no wasted fabric, no stress. It's like,
right.
yes, Yes.
The other ruler that I'm designed that I use a lot, it's kind of my little go-to ruler, is my Easy Jelly Roll ruler. Mm-hmm. And I literally, again, it was see a need, fill a need. I had started designing quilts for my second book of jelly roll quilts, mm-hmm. and I just thought, you know what, I'm just making the same cuts over and over and over again, and from either layer cakes, which are 10-inch squares, or those strips, 2.5-inch strips, and I thought, you know, I really want to make it so I can see all the markings of the cuts that I make over and over and over again. And the other thing was, because we're all, you know, getting on in years, mm-hmm. I couldn't see late at night when I was working with regular, you know, black ink, and I thought, well, I need a ruler that's got bright mint green so it shows up when I'm working at 10 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. And I can see it. And that's literally how that ruler came about. It was just kind of my little go-to ruler that I can grab. It's 5 by 10 inches, which is half of a layer cake right there. But all the other markings on it are just so clear and easy to see, so you can make those cuts at a quick glance.
Now, this one, what is its purpose? Since, you know, it's called a jelly roll ruler, but why would you use this versus a standard ruler? What makes it easier?
Just those mint green lines.
Okay,
I also took off all the 1/8-inch markings. Because when you're working with pre-cuts especially, mm-hmm. you almost never cut anything with an 1/8-inch increment. Mm-hmm. It's mm-hmm. always quarter, half, and whole sizes. And I thought, I need to make this ruler clear and easy to use, self-explanatory, so that when you lay it down on your fabric pieces, you can just see really fast exactly how to line things up. So can you use it for other projects? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It was a case of just wanting to have something that was quick and easy and easy to carry to class.
Yeah, that's a great size. Yeah, for that.
Is.
Yeah, it's a great size. So when somebody goes out and is contemplating, I mean, we did say about being sure you understood it, but what other kind of tip can you give people for contemplating picking up a specialty ruler?
Absolutely. You know what? Do a little bit of research on the internet if you have access mm-hmm. to the internet as far as seeing if there's accompanying videos out there. A lot of people who design these specialty rulers have free YouTube videos. Mm-hmm. That makes it really easy to, you know, log on, watch a 5-minute video, and see visually how it's done. If you don't hang on to those instructions that come with it, you know, if you have these accompanying videos or a place mm-hmm. that you can go, a website, it just makes it really easy and fun to be able to see how to use those rulers.
That's an excellent tip. Now, how do you store yours?
Oh, I have a great method, and it's something that you can buy at, you know, any of these local quilt shops or your local discount fabric stores. It's a little wood grooved tool, or it's like a little base, mm-hmm. and it's just made of wood, and it's got grooves in it, and I store all my rulers standing up. At one time, I had pegboards on the wall and hung them on pegboards, but I just found that kind of took up more space, and right now I don't happen to have a lot of wall space, mm-hmm. so I found that I could store a lot of rulers in a small, basically a cabinet, all standing up on end, and that way I can, you know, kind of stack them by size from tallest to lowest down front and see everything that I need at a glance.
Perfect. Well, we're going to switch gears here right at the end because I want you to tell us about your newest book that's coming out.
Oh, thank you. Yes, it's called Modern Quilts and More.
Yay.
It's my fifth book. I'm really excited. I've always been a traditionally based quilter and piecer, but I do love that modern aesthetic. I love all the bright, clean, clear colors and, you know, saturated colors and use of negative space. And I just thought, I think there's a lot of other people out there that enjoy that kind of look, but they maybe don't like to do the improvisational piecing that mm-hmm. some modern quilters do. So I thought there's got to be a good way to combine, you know, those traditional units that you recognize and put them into quilts that are modern and fresh and fun and just fun to piece. And I really advocate using a lot of your stash and throwing in an ugly fabric here or there to add some zips. So you don't have to go out and buy a lot. It's just basically using what you have in a new, fresh way.
The cover is stunning.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, my
gosh. I love orange.
Oh, my gosh. But it's just stunning. And the quilting is done by who on the cover quilt?
Judy Madsen of Green Fairy Quilts.
Yeah, it's just, I mean, the book is just, you can see it on Kimberly's website, Kimberly Imo, all one word, E-I-N-M-O, it's her name. So you have to go check that out.
Thank you, yes.
Yeah. And then
it's coming out next month.
Next month in March 2014. So just before we end here, you have a few things to help people on your website for the rulers, right?
Yes, I have some fun free downloads. I also have a one of the rulers I designed was the Easy Pineapple ruler, which is basically making pineapple blocks from logs, like you would assemble a log cabin block, but you get a pineapple, so you get trapezoids. Really easy. And I have all these accompanying free downloads for using those rulers. It takes all the math out. All you need to do is use the charts, and it's pretty self-explanatory and just makes it really, really easy to use.
And that's under the Books and Tools tab on your website.
Yes, it is. It sure is. And if you just hover over it with your cursor, it says free downloads, and you click right there.
Well, Kimberly, this has been so wonderful. Thanks for sharing a new perspective on specialty rulers.
Thank you, Pat. I'm happy to do it.
We're going to take a break, and we'll be right back with American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. Well, actually, I have a little bit more time just before we take that break. We recorded that segment with Kimberly because she was out and about traveling all over the place. So just before we take break, let me point you over to our website, allpeoplequilt.com. If you haven't been there lately, we have a whole lot of fun things going on. And sign up for the newsletter so that you're always getting what's new and great. I thought I might just share with you a couple of things that I like that's going on over at the site. We have color options. You know, if you haven't done that before, whenever you see a quilt on the website, it's often a version of the quilt that was in the print issue. And so it's a color option. It'll tell you what the original quilt was and what issue it is in. And then we have Laura Benke might be one of the people who has made a color option. I'm right now looking at one from the Scrap Lab project, and it's called from the 2013, summer 2013 magazine Scrap Lab setting. It's got tablecloth. It's got placemats and coasters. So anyways, there's all kinds of different projects out there. I was actually searching for some applique things and found one of my projects that's on the allpeoplequilt.site. And you can put in like my name and you'll find free projects that I have of a little flower power done up into three blocks for a table runner. And that's a really cute one that you can practice your applique for. So when we come back, we're going to take our official break now. And when we come back, Roseanne Kermes of Rosebud's Cottage is going to be here. And she and I are going to talk a little bit about banners and having a swap with your friends, because that's always fun. So we'll be right back.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
see what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to Facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I have Roseanne Kermes from Rosebuzz Cottage. And Roseanne and I were talking that we should share with you a little bit about banners. Banners are fun. They're easy. They're exciting. You can do them yourself. You can do them as groups. They're done as big projects, little projects. So, Roseanne, are you ready to talk banner love? Ready to talk. Well, let's first talk about a project that's out there that you're involved with and you asked for designers to contribute to called Banners of Hope through the Craft and Hobby Association. What is that about?
Well, last year, the Craft and Hobby Association organized a section within their organization called the Fabric Arts Council, and they asked me to serve on the board for that. And as we were looking for something that we could do as an activity at the CHA Mega Show in Anaheim in January, we kept coming up with ideas about how we could incorporate not just fabric and sewing, but all the hobbies that are pretty apparent at the Craft and Hobby Show. Mm-hmm. And so that's sort of how we got going on the Banners of Hope. We thought that we wanted them to be made out of fabric and to have some kind of sewing element to them, so they are all hemmed. And made out of heavy canvas or heavy fabric. But the Banners of Hope are a hybrid of like Tibetan prayer flags. I don't know. Are you familiar with them, Pat?
A little bit, you know, just because of the history, the little banners now, I always think of them as like sort of these cute decorations. But the prayer flags are sort of what inspired most of them, aren't they? Isn't it?
Yes. And prayer flags are a type of thing that is supposed to like make you search out a reason for each of the flags, you know, like they have some kind of connotation to your current life and stuff. So we wanted to use that prayer flag concept for the Banners of Hope. Mm-hmm. And the point of it is that we wanted a program that anybody could take part in, no matter what their sewing skills were. Mm-hmm. But they could also give back in their community, you know, because in that kind of way, some, you know, you could do it for an awareness program. You know, obviously breast cancer awareness, mm-hmm. you know, comes up as one. But also things that any age group could do. So children could do this and take them to hospitals or shelters or things like that where they can connect with other children. It's the same, you know, no matter what your age group is, it's the connecting between what you like to create and your creativity to try and give that feeling of hope to somebody who maybe would be in like a hopeless situation.
Yeah, the banners, do you know how many you ended up collecting to exhibit for that event?
Well, we had, I think about 70 came before the show.
Wow.
And they were solicited to different designers who are designers within the Craft and Hobby Association. And mm-hmm. I know we reached out beyond that. I know you made one as well. And that was hanging at the show. And then we invited retailers and vendors who were at the show to come and stop and make them. And we had a lot of people take the time to do that. And we ended up with around 150 of them.
Mm.
And they were hung all around the booth. We had what we called a construction zone at the mm-hmm. at the show. So we had everything that they could think of to use for that. We had beads. We had Physics donated some die-cut machines and die-cuts. We had mm-hmm. fabric. The canvas was from Fabric Additions. They gave us a canvas for the backing. American Patchwork and Quilting was very involved in it. In fact, Jill Mead, who's one of the editors, is on the Fabric Arts Council board. So we solicited among the different vendors on the mm-hmm. on the show floor and asked for help with that. And as people made these different projects, there were no two alike. They were hanging all over the booth, kind of mm-hmm. clothesline style, very mm-hmm. inspiring, very beautiful, and every message was different. People could really do anything they wanted to, you know, so that was what we were hoping for, that mm-hmm. crossover between fabric and the other crafts and things that people like to do.
And you can go to the craftandhobby.org site and go in their search box for Banners of Hope. And it gives you all kinds of information about how to make them and ideas for how to do things in your community to sort of make awareness for whatever cause you want to
Yeah, and there's a pattern in there that we wanted them to be a certain size. They're 8 inches by 12 inches when they're finished. They all have a casing at the top because we wanted them to be able to look homogenous no matter where you, what part of the country you were working in. There's on the Craft and Hobby website under the Banners of Hope, there's also instructions on how you can take it into your community. There's ideas for retailers to use Banners of Hope, you know, within their stores and their community too. So there's just a lot of support out there for it. We had, after the, or toward the end of the show, we had a meeting, and there were a number of people who were educators who wanted to take it into their classroom into a community center, especially the ones that, it seemed like it was, it really touched a lot with people who work with children. And that was, you know, that was what we wanted.
It's, I think the banners themselves are just an amazing, small, creative outlet. They're not overwhelming. They're little. If you string them with friends, banners, which we're going to talk about, you know, you can have this whole sort of friendship piece when you're done. The shapes are really cool. Now, these were rectangles, but a lot of times banners will actually be a triangle or a pennant. What is that shape? Yeah, like a pennant. So you and I, actually you had you had done one for fall for like harvest, a harvest banner with friends. And I was jealous because I wanted one and I didn't do that with you. Yes. So we did one for Valentine's.
And that one was just for fun. So this one's like totally different from Banners of Hope. This was just for us to goof around. I think you and me and the other people who we invited to take part in this, you know, we're so busy making things for magazines or to support fabric or because of our store, so we forget to take time to make things just for fun. And I think that's what I got out of the Valentine's swap that we did.
I just loved being able to do something that was not a little bit outside of my area because, you know, I put on beads and pom-poms and stuck fabric washi tape on there. You know, there's stuff that's not sewn. And that was what was great. You didn't have to actually sew everything because tell us who all was in the swap.
Yeah. Well, you and I talked about it, and then you took off on vacation. So I decided, okay, well, if I'm in charge, I'll start finding out who we're going to have. And I decided to take two people from the East Coast that I knew, and you and then designer Eileen Hall. She works with Sizzix, and turns out she lives in your same town. And then two people from the West Coast, and I chose Pam Vera McGinnis from Pam Kitty Morning and Suzanne Zing from Strawberry Patches Quilt Shop, and they're both in California. And then there was Sherry Falls from This and That Patterns and myself. We were in the middle of the country. And my vision was these banners, the Be Mine banner would be crossing the United States in the mail. And so in my head, that's what I was seeing, all these little airmail envelopes with our cute little banners in them. I know that we have it on all of our blogs on the size, and because we wanted them all to be the same size.
Right.
We had our triangles measured six inches across and 8.5 inches at the point. So I just found the middle of the 6 inches and drew a line down so that I got the same triangle. That way, there, no matter what we made our Be Mine banners out of, they all would be uniform. And then they had to have a ties on the corners and Valentine colors. And then after that, it was pretty much free game, wasn't it? We could do anything we wanted.
I know. We have let's talk a little bit about the base, because I'm fascinated that I don't think out of, what were there, six of us, that we each made, let's explain that we each got a letter, and we had to make six of the exact same and then send five away and keep one. So that's how the swap was handled. And we had a deadline.
And our word was be mine.
So some
right. Be mine.
Some got the B, some got the E, for instance.
Right. So the bases, I think every one of us used a different base. What did you use?
I fused fabric to paper and then sewed it around the edge so it wouldn't come up. And then that was my base. And somebody used Deco Bond, like that really heavy interfacing that's almost like a board. Some people used, I think Pam used felt behind
Pam
her.
Pam had felt, and she had a cute pinking on the edge, so it's just adorable. And then she sewed her fabric on the top, and she had a ruffle. Eileen used cardboard.
It was all paper.
Yeah, all paper. And felt.
Yeah.
She had felt letters. I used Thermaweb's fleece, fusible fleece.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I fused it to the back and not the front so that the front was not as stiff, and then applied my stuff down through all the layers. There was another one on paper too. Suzanne's.
Hers was on a heavy interfacing.
Oh, that's an interfacing.
Yeah, amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, she made a little bird, and just hers is like incredible.
Hers makes me, every time I look at it, it was so beautiful. And people can look on our blogs and they can see the pictures. But yeah, Suzanne's had that cute little bird up at the top. And it was perfect because it was almost the middle of the six letters.
Right.
So it was like perfect transition there for the second word. What did you like about it the best?
I liked that we had all these different ties. You know, some had string, some had rickrack, some had ribbon, and then how we all put the tie onto the banner. There was grommets and sewn and little clothespins.
Yep. That's right, I forgot about the clothespins.
I know. It was just, I think that was just so fun. And I think it was Pam's that used multiple things. So she had like rickrack and ribbon, and they were just so incredibly fun. Now, if you were going to organize this, if you're going to give advice, what's the one, big thing that people should think about?
I think, set up your rules. Like we had, ours were, we had the parameter established, what we had to do, and then the color, we wanted to stay within their traditional Valentine's colors. The harvest swap that I did, we had, it had to have a harvest color theme. So, I think that's the one thing. Set up the parameters, get the rules, let everybody know exactly when they have to be done, especially if they're being mailed. I know we had some problems, of course, with mine, not getting to somebody in time because it took almost a week to get there. So, make sure you build enough time in there. If you're doing it for a certain holiday, make sure that
just lay out all the rules. Well, Roseanne, this has been wonderful. It's been a lot of fun.
Great. Thanks a lot, Pat. Glad to be on here.
This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. We're all podcasted. Visit us online at allpeoplequilt.com.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques.